Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, don't you just love your scars? Well, maybe not. I guess it depends on how deep they are or how you feel about them anyway. You know, you might be proud of some of them or not, but there's also so many scars we don't even know about that we carry around. And to help us understand scarring in life, I'm so happy to have back on Energy Stew again, a wonderful woman who just has so much to tell us and is a psychologist, has a big practice, and I've known her for decades, Dr. Jane Goldberg. Jane, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Hi, Peter. Thank you.
Sure. So how scarred are we?
Oh, God. We are all so heavily, intensely, traumatically scarred all over the place. But that's the good news, not the bad news, because scars are really important for personal growth. Scars have a long history in terms of the evolution of mankind. We know that deliberate scarification dates back to 1700 BC, and it actually was used as a signal or a sign of identity way back when. It was used as a form of identification of personhood, and if you didn't have a scar, then you were actually considered to be a non-person in ancient Greece. The name for it was decimos, not marked. And so the absence of scarring meant actually the deliberate and conscious absence of personhood. So it was very important for the ancient Greeks to get scarred, and they tried really hard. And the men that were scarred the most, they were the ones that were seen as the most virile and the best men for women to want to be with.
Wow. And I think nowadays we're all persons. We're all scarred.
We're trying to all be persons, yes.
And I'm actually thinking of the very first scar I got.
No.
And the pain.
No, no, it's not Peter. You just mean me. The very first scar that you're referring to is the first conscious scar that you got, like when you were a child. That's not your first scar. Let me tell you your first scar. Look down.
Oh, look the belly down. Button.
Your belly button, that is the first scar. And that scar is the most important scar because that scar is the scar giving you your identity and separating you from the symbiotic relationship with your mother. That scar says, I am an individual. I am a person forevermore. And we don't think about our belly button as being a scar, but it is.
Well, another big scar that I have that people don't think of as scars, and it came with a lot of pain that I wasn't, you know, I was conscious of at the time, but certainly no one remembers these pains, is circumcision.
Yes. I mean, it's surgery. It's a cutting of the flesh. And the purpose of scarring biologically is that it basically, the skin congeals together and it prevents bleeding. Or it stops bleeding. So it has a very important defensive purpose in terms of saving your life. So yes, you have a physical scar there, and you have what you're referring to, I think, is probably a psychic or emotional scar.
Because, because I saw my sons getting circumcised, and it was done without any anesthesia, and it was, I'm sure, extremely painful. And no one thought twice about it. I didn't like watching it at all. I didn't think it was good for them.
I've never been to one, actually, but my understanding is that they have wine that's available for the people watching. And usually what the people do is they take a fingerful of wine and then they put it in the mouth of the baby so that the baby is kind of woozy. And I don't know what the fuck you're doing to me, but I don't care anymore.
No, but that wasn't done by these midwives.
Oh, midwives, yeah. Maybe the Moyle is the one that does that.
Maybe, right. So we have many physical scars. And it's even an identity nowadays. People will, ask for, did this, you know, if you want to recognize someone that, you know, might have committed a crime or something, did you notice any scars? And then it's easy to identify them.
Yes.
Right. But also, there are so many that they're hard to keep track of as we grow up, and many of them disappear, but not all. I think what intrigued me most about this subject are the emotional scars and our fears pertaining to what can scar us.
Well, just to help to support the idea that physical scars are still important, what I would say about that is physical scars and emotional scars generally are tied together. Of course, you can have emotional scars without physical scars, but usually with physical scars, you also have emotional scars. And I'm going to tell a really personal story about that. I have a scar right here. And this is-
Wait a second. Not everybody is seeing this, so we could, for the audio audience, you could tell them where you're pointing.
I'm drawing a line from my ear down to my collarbone on my neck. And the scar that I have there is from a razor blade. I was attacked when my last year in college and by a stranger. I was lying in bed and I guess he just missed my jugular. So I guess he wanted to kill me. He basically all he wanted to do was rape me, but I think he didn't really care whether I was dead or alive. So it's a scar that I've lived with. You mostly can't see it because my hair covers it. And as I was raising my daughter, you know, she would like put her fingers on my face when she was an infant. And this ridge, you know, she kind of was interested in because it was different than the rest of my skin. And so when she became verbal, she asked me what it was. And it was very difficult for me to decide what to tell her about what it was. So that was a gradual process. But that experience of my life basically took 10 years out of my emotional life because I lived in fear for 10 years.
Sure.
And so this was probably 20 years after it happened. I was with a holistic doctor and he saw the scar and he said, the problem with scar tissue is that it prevents nerve transmission and energy transmission. It serves as a block of energy. So it's one reason why they say don't get earrings these days is because, you know, any piercing interferes with the energy line, you know, vis-a-vis Chinese medicine, Asian medicine, that kind of thing. And so he said, you've got an energy blockage there and I can help to break that up by giving you some injection there. And I forget what he had. He may have had procaine in the injection. I forget exactly what it was. And it didn't really matter because it was really the needle that was doing the trick, not so much what was in the needle. And as the second he put that needle in that scar, I was filled with the deepest sadness that I had ever had in my life.
Wow.
And for the whole rest of the day, I just felt this profound sadness, lethargy, trauma. And so I'd spent a lot of time in therapy and analysis talking about my rape and, you know, really felt that I'd worked it through and was having a great life and didn't have any aftermath in terms of my relationships with men. And, you know, thought that I'd really put that to bed until he put that needle in my scar and I realized there's still some shit in there.
Wow, yeah. I once had an experience during my previous marriage where we were together walking into an enclosed space and two men with knives rushed in behind us. And I at first didn't know what to, you know, I knew they were, you know, danger, extremely dangerous. But then as one was bringing a knife blade up to my wife's throat, I realized that I couldn't allow this. And I was a karate black belt. I used my karate and I attacked these guys and I was able to beat them off.
Oh God, Peter, that's so impressive.
Thank you. It was really, you know, but it was very scarring emotionally, because even afterwards for a couple of weeks, it was like, well, what if I had done this wrong or that wrong during my attack? You know, what if I, you know, wasn't as good at it as I thought? But I it was out of survival. And yeah. Luckily, I made all the right moves. But I had to live with fear and subsequently people tried to mug me a couple more times, and I actually used my karate again. But that was one where someone was actually threatening my wife's throat with a knife.
So that leads me to present a theory about the one of the purposes in terms of evolution of scarring and the importance of scarring. And that has to do with, they've theorized that it developed alongside the evolution of human intelligence. And so instead of having to rely on our neocortex to tell us when we're in danger, which there's a fraction of a second, I mean, a real fraction. It's very, very small, but to the brain, it's an enormous amount of time between when you perceive something and when you react to something. It's not, the brain doesn't process instantaneously. And that fraction of a second can mean everything. So the importance of scarring is that it reminds us of the past. It reminds us of our past experiences, of our past mistakes. And so it brings us more fully in the present. And so all of the, since that experience that you had, that first experience, every subsequent experience, you'll react a little faster. And that fraction of a second may mean a huge difference in terms of the outcome of the event.
All right, now it brings me to a question about our current time that we're in and the scarring of fear of this current time of viruses and, you know, threats to pandemics and things like that. And so the scarring, what have we learned from the scarring of this?
I think we can't talk about it in the past tense, first of all. I think we're still learning and we're still being scarred. And I think what people are learning is different for every person. And hopefully everyone, as opposed to some of us, is learning something from it. I think the main problem is that so many people have learned to live with fear as a constant state.
Yes, and I fear for the children and my grandchildren. My granddaughter, who's 4.5, is so afraid of germs, you know, because of seeing everybody being masked and socially distanced for so long, and being cooped up.
It's not, being afraid of germs is not the worst of it in my mind. What has happened is that people are afraid of people.
Because of germs, because people might be carrying germs.
Yes, you're correct literally, but I think to a child's mind, they're not necessarily making that, they're just knowing people are dangerous.
Yeah, wow. I hadn't thought of that. So then when you, I was just thinking of, you know, mass men used to be bad guys. And
no, not the Lone Ranger.
Well, yeah, I was thinking of the Lone Ranger too. But other than that, masks used to signify hiding something. And now they don't. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, I think it should always be a conscious decision what we keep within ourselves, which you're calling hiding. and what we reveal to the outside world. And the commerce between the inside and the outside, our inner mentation, our inner psychic life has to be 50% of who we are. And then based on that, how we decide to present ourselves in terms of what we allow to be visible should be a conscious decision. And what's happening with this is that it is not our decision. It is not an individual decision anymore. It's being imposed upon us. Some people have decided, I am going to make it an individual decision. I'm doing it or I'm not doing it. I'm doing it in some circumstances, not other circumstances. But for the most part, the government has told us what it is that we need to do. And the rationale is that we need to do it in order not only to protect ourselves, but to protect others also. So independent of the correctness or incorrectness of that theory, the effect on the psychic system of the human is that we are no longer in a position to make these decisions for ourselves.
Right. And there's so much talk about potential trouble in the future that we don't know what to believe about our futures. And so in a sense, the scarring is so deep, we don't trust anything.
Well, scarring can lead to a dreaded anticipatory anxiety, or in other words, what you're describing as fear of the future. Yes.
Right.
And again, that's one of the evolutionary purposes of scarring, is to remind us this happened. You know, the last time I jumped into the water, I didn't check the depth of the water and I hit a rock and I got a concussion. And so that is going to remind us that next time you want to jump in the water, think about it and find out what's in the water first. So it, again, scarring has such a valuable evolutionary purpose that we do need to pay attention to that and to welcome that. But we also need to understand the dangers of scarring in terms of pulling us into our own selves in a way that we become unsocial or antisocial. And all of mankind, all of what it is that we've created, in the humanity of man, we've done collectively, we've done with each other, we've done as a togetherness event, a togetherness experience. And so to the extent that we have isolated ourselves by staying home, by, you know, wearing masks in public, by dismantling that sense of community and togetherness, that has very serious consequences for the future.
Well, one of the biggest problems I see is the ability or not to believe in what's true or not. There's such confusion about what's true. It's amazing that, you know, there are so many false flags that people are following, or true flags, and we don't know the difference. And we don't know who to trust, who not to trust. And that creates the confusion. It's like, you know, as you said about, you know, if you dive into a lake and you hit a rock and it gives you a concussion, then you get out and someone says, oh, there was never a rock there. So I don't know what hurt you, but must be in your mind. and we don't even know if you really had a concussion because, you know, I mean, certainly if you have a contusion, it's a different story. But there are so many stories that can be built around what's true nowadays.
Okay, I'm gonna pick up on that word, stories. Yeah. We are storytelling beings. Language allows us to tell stories, and we always will tell stories. It's in our nature to tell stories. As a psychoanalyst, which is what I do professionally for a living, what I do, that's Petey. Petey dog. What I do is to help my patients to construct a narrative or a life story that they feel resonates with their memories, resonates with their idea of who they were, what their experiences were, who they are, who they want to be. And so when you talk about whether a story is true or false, you're really talking about the construction of a narrative. And the narrative that people choose to believe is the narrative that they're comfortable believing. And so you're calling it one narrative is true and one is false, but what's more important than that is that people are developing the narratives that they want to have as definitions of their self.
And who they want to believe in, no matter what.
Well, they want to believe in the people that they feel are like them. So it's still, you know, working out who it is that you are and your own identity. When you pick people, they're essentially mirrors of some aspect of self, of either who you thought you were, who you want to be, you know, who you might be.
Right. And if we're invested in tribal thinking, then we have to remain within the tribal mindset.
Well, yes, there is social pressure. And so it always is good to identify with a tribe when the tribe is a tribe that has consciousness about evolution of humanity, both as individuals and as a whole.
Well, that it's whether the tribe is thinking collectively or just protectively. And so the tribe might pursue its own truths that no other tribe agrees with.
If it's a collective protection, then unless they're really under physical threat, then that's not useful in terms of evolving to a better sense of identity, a better sense of self, and a better contribution to society.
Right, but there are stories now of physical threats that are either true or not true. And many people just don't know the difference. And so we have to decide which truth we want, and we all can disagree with each other.
Well, you've described pretty well what's happening.
I know. And it's so frustrating because so many of us have individual ideas that might be out of the mainstream of different tribal truths. And then we have to be
Peter, you're talking about fear. You know, I want to try to bring it back to scarification. I'm not sure how to at this point, but the fear is of both sides fearing each other. So if you're a believer in vaccines, then the fear is that from the people that aren't vaccinated. And if you're a non-believer of vaccines, the fear is of the people who have been vaccinated and the shredding?
Shedding, yeah.
Shedding.
Yeah, there's anywhere you look, there's more fear. And
yes.
We don't know
how to
live
yeah,
with it. That's yes, scarring.
But the fear, the problem with the fear is, again, is that it's dividing us. And with all through history, there's been division. You know, there are towns that fight each other and civil wars and, you know, my neighbor, you know, disagrees with me about blah, blah, blah. So there's always going to be conflict. But the question is, do we have a system by which we can dialogue about the conflict and come to an acceptance of the other person's point of view, even though it may not be ours, without that leading to a destructive end? That's the question.
Yeah, let's hope that there is more realization of the need to communicate politely with each other and listen to each other.
So in terms of scarification, I think that often when you know the actual stimulus that has caused the scar, say a man who raped you, or you know the guy who was coming at your wife with a knife, there's a tendency to be very angry at that person, and that anger resides in you and fear resides in you. And so those are the emotional scars. There's a lot of talk about forgiveness. I see forgiveness as a kind of religious concept. So I do consider that I have a spiritual awareness, but I am not religious. So I don't really think about forgiveness very much. I just think about resolution. I think about what it is that you need to go through psychically or even spiritually that leads you to come to a place of acceptance of what has happened and the personal meaning that you can bring to bear for that experience that actually does confer meaning on the experience, that there's something that's learned from it and that it puts you in a different place, emotionally, psychically, spiritually, cognitively,
right.
That you've made it into a growth experience.
Right, and I think coming back to what you just said, and there's probably a lot we could talk about there, having to do with forgiveness doesn't work unless there's resolution.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great point. But we're really nearing the end of the show. And I'm so glad that we could talk about this and just introduce ideas to people that will help them process ongoingly. And hopefully we can talk again in the future more about these deep subjects. And how can people connect with you?
What should I give? Should I give my email address?
Whatever you feel comfortable.
My website is dr, for Dr. Dr. Jane Goldberg.com. And I have two holistic centers, one in Puerto Rico, La Casa Spa and Wellness Puerto Rico.com, and the one in Manhattan, which is La Casa Spa.com, which I've renamed La Casa Spa and Wellness in New York, because it's really not a spa, it's really a wellness center. And we are open and we're doing amazing treatments, both to prevent COVID, but also to treat COVID. They're natural treatments that are very effective in stimulating our immune system and making us stronger and making us not be damaged by the scarification of a virus, let's say.
Good, I love that. Thanks, Jane, for being on Energy Stew. It's so much fun to talk with you.
Thank you, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.